you have to evaluate the value of, okay, DJ Chark at X amount of money, or NWI or Kyle Phillips at much less X amount of money. Welcome into the Hot Read Podcast. I'm your host, Easton Freese, Director of Published Content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network, and I am joined, as always, by producer JT. JT, how are you on day two of Easton in a new environment?
I know. It's a great time. I'm feeling good, and once again, we have another week of back-to-back shows on not our planned days because of things out of our control. So you know what? We're just going to keep rolling with it. And
not to be blasphemous, but I feel a little bit like Moses lately. Just the plagues that have been thrown at our usual again, all first world problems for the most part. Our internet doesn't work. We have a dinner planned, like, or our parents are in town. So like, it's not anything really to complain over, but it's been very annoying. Did you ever read A Series of Unfortunate Events when you were a kid? Yeah, that's what it feels like. So that's what it has been like for us, but we power on regardless. And today marks us getting back on schedule. Finally, we are here first thing Wednesday morning for you. Hopefully you're listening on Wednesday, and we're going to talk a little bit about Titans, a little bit about the NFL, a little free agency, a little draft, a little bit of everything, kind of a smorgasbord, a charcuterie of topics that we're going to get through today. And then hopefully, I hate promising these things because you just never know. Hopefully, I'll be back with my new router, fingers crossed, on Friday's show. But whether I'm here or back in my home studio, it's no big deal. We'll be back first thing Friday, and we'll just keep chugging along as we get closer and closer to the draft.
You do look very studious with all your books behind you.
No, I read every single one of those before I got on.
That's crazy.
That's what I've been busy doing for the last.
That's just all your prospect notes on every single player for the draft right behind.
This is just offense. The defense is behind the computer. You can't see it yet. So and then special teams. I have an entire drawer of special teams notes.
All right.
Today, we're not talking about that just yet. We're going to start with a little bit of a plug. We have got a little bit of a story to tell you if you are a fan of this show and you've gotten to know JT and I a little bit, or maybe you feel like, I don't know, JT, when I listen to a podcast or a show for an extended period of time, I start to feel like I know the people on that show. You know, you feel connected to them. It's a one-way situation. They don't know you, but you know them. But we may unveil something here that folks would not have guessed about us. In a past life, JT and I were music majors in college. We actually met our freshman year. We had our music theory one class together. And then we met in a choir together. We both have very gorgeous angelic voices. Just trust us. We're not going to prove that on this show. This is the wrong place and wrong time for that. But we do both love to sing, and we love music. We ended up not choosing that as a career path. Chose something completely
different. I made it one semester.
Yeah, I made it 2 years. JT made it one semester. He realized his calling much earlier than I did. But it's crazy where life takes you sometimes. You never really end up doing what you expect to do, it feels like. And this is where we're at now, and we love what we're doing. But like I said, in the past life, we loved music. And while we were in school at Belmont here in Nashville, we were in a competitive all-male a cappella group called Pitchman. And at the time of joining, it was a social drinking club of guys that just enjoyed singing.
No, it wasn't. It was just like a bunch of like barbershop, like rando boys. Like,
yeah, and they also, but they stunk. Yeah, they were bad. But the group of guys around our age that came in, we kind of revolutionized it, became very competitive. If you've ever seen Pitch Perfect, the ICCAs in that show, the competition, the National Acapella Competition for College Groups, that's a real thing. That movie was based on the real ICCAs, the International Competitive Collegiate, what is it? I don't know.
International Championship of Collegiate Acapella.
Bingo. That's what it is. And we competed a handful of times when we were in the group, JT. But then we're not in college any longer. We've still got buddies connected to the group. We are now alumni of that group, and we've got a little bit of a pitch for you because, like I said, we went from rags to riches with this group. They are headed to finals of ICCA's global competition. They're headed to New York. They're one of the top 10 groups. Really, really fantastic group of guys. Even if acapella is not your thing, it is impressive nonetheless, if you're musically inclined at all, what some of these really top-end acapella groups in the country are able to do. And it's really expensive to get to New York. And so we wanted to just give them a shout out because that was a big part of our lives for like a 3 or 4 year span a couple of years ago. And we're still really close with those guys. We wanted to give them a shout out. They've got a GoFundMe going on as they try to get to New York. And if you're looking for the sob story element of this, here's the sob story. When JT and I were sophomores, correct? When we were sophomores, we won our semifinal and got our ticket punched to finals for the first time as a group. We were super excited. And that was like 10 seconds before the world fell apart. And it ruined everything, including, of course, you know, having a main stage show in New York City. So that got canceled and it was a super, super bummer. This is the redemption arc. They are finally back after a couple of years of coming up just short. And so this is us kind of coming full circle, getting to fulfill what was taken from us by COVID a couple of years ago. So
I won't be performing, but when they win, and I say when they win, I'll be drinking a Busch Light out of that acapella cup. You bet your butt on it.
This show, whichever one comes first after their win, is going to be, we may just record at like 11 p.m. and have a, you know, knock a couple back and just talk about acapella. Who knows what happens. We'll be celebrating for sure. But yeah, we've got a GoFundMe for them in the link of this podcast. If you want to throw a couple dollars their way, they're just a bunch of poor college students who are trying to get to New York to compete, and they deserve it. And they've worked their butts off to go. So that's our pitch. And we hope that you are able to contribute as we were. Just a couple of bucks goes a long way. And with that, let's get into today's topics. Are we ready, JT?
I'm ready.
All right. We got the warm-up starting us off here as the usual arrangement dictates. And for today's warm-up, I have a topic that I've been sitting on now since last week. I think this was something that I was talking about on Twitter on Friday. It wasn't something that I wanted to mention in the mock draft episode yesterday, which, by the way, shameless plug, if you've not checked that out, it is an episode that really was plagued. We had to postpone it 2 or 3 or 4 times because of different reasons, but we kept postponing it because we didn't want to rush it. We didn't want to do it halfway because it was such a really important episode to us. Well, I think it's a really good episode. So go check that out if you've not already. It's my full mock draft 1.0. We go through all 32 of the picks in the first, or 31, excuse me, picks in the first round. Talk about some of those prospects. If you're wanting to get up on your knowledge on some of these guys that are going to be the best of the best out of this draft class, the first round blue chippers, you've got to go check out that episode, which again was posted yesterday. And if you want to learn about who I think the Titans should draft, I did a full 7-round mock draft in there as well for the Titans. We went through in detail. That's what the real detail. We went through each of those prospects and why I think the Titans should be interested in them. Really good episode. So go check that out as soon as you're done listening here. But for today, this is what I want to talk about in the warm-up. It's about Titans fans' perspective on the offseason. So too often, JT, I see someone talking about improving this position or that position through free agency, like it's this binary choice. Either you add free agents or you're just stuck in the mud. You're not going anywhere. You clearly, if you're not adding in free agency, you clearly are not interested in improving your roster. And not only can you trade players, draft players, improvement players, guys you can bring in via trade, via the draft, that are going to be immediate improvements to your team. But if you look historically, there's plenty of analytics and analysis on these things, ways that you can improve your team that show free agency a lot of the time is one of the worst ways to go about that, especially for the top end guys on your roster. Typically with teams that are successful, how they operate in free agency, and we've talked about this, JT, they look to shop in the bargain bin. They look to carefully and intentionally add to their roster, add to the depth on their roster, not the starters necessarily. Maybe a starter here or there. There's certain guys that are worth paying for sure. Not every free agent signing fails to live up to the billing. But overall, you get more value when you look for careful, intentional adds to depth or rotational pieces in free agency. Whereas starters, to get the most bang for your buck via trade or via the draft, that's usually your best bet, just statistically speaking, when we look back on the history of the league. So when I see people online talking about the Titans need to sign a free agent wide receiver, or their wide receiver room is not going to improve. It's just, it can't get better unless they sign it. They clearly, the Titans aren't interested in being a modern NFL team. They're not interested in being a modern passing team. They're happy to sit on their hands and just roll with what they've got. This is asinine and silly and untrue, first of all, but misguided as well. Improving at a certain position isn't an ornament swap, right? It's not as simple as mixing and matching until you have the best set possible. It's a detailed cost-benefit analysis. So just because a free agent is more talented than a player already on the roster doesn't mean their cost-benefit value exceeds that of either A, receivers already under contract that are a sunk cost, or B, the value of players available via trade or in the draft. Whenever I respond to people talking in this way, pointing out that, hey, guess what? They don't have to add wide receiver or any player at any position in free agency in order to improve that position group. There are other ways to do that. It's often thrown back that, like, well, obviously, you know, free agency isn't necessarily the best way to go about it, but look at the free agent wide receivers available. There's a lot of these guys that are better than guys that the Titans have on their roster. So the reason they're not adding them is because they're not interested. Again, no. You have to consider, yeah, maybe DJ Chark is better than Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Maybe he'd be a better option to be one of your top three receivers. Not maybe. The answer is yes, he would be. And there were other receivers and are other receivers on the free agent market that fall into that camp. But they don't come for free. You don't get to just pluck him off the free agent line and then throw a guy onto the free agent line and just swap out the contracts. It's not how it works. You have to evaluate the value of, okay, DJ Chark at X amount of money, or NWI or Kyle Phillips at much less X amount of money. That's the math, the mental math that's being done here by these front offices. And it's the reason why you don't see them just go after willy-nilly free agents, because they're better than the players on their roster. They have to factor in how much they're worth, how much they're going to be paid, their age, the competitiveness on the market for that position, for that player, the fit of that player on the team. There's so many variables other than, well, he's better, so go get him and drop him, right? So does Rand Carthon need to add more talent at wide receiver before next season? Obviously. Of course. If you asked him that, he would say, yeah, I do. It is obvious to anybody with eyeballs and a brain that this team has to get better at receiver. So I'm not saying fans should be content with the tight. A lot of people misunderstood my tweet as this, that fans should be content with the Titans rolling with the receivers they currently have. It's not what I'm saying. And if you managed to read, this was the kind of thread that I post where you get all of the happy for you or sorry that happened, don't know, I ain't reading all that meme. You get that a lot, and it's like, okay, cool, but then don't act like you have an opinion on my take if you haven't clearly. I had one person send me that meme and then tell me my take was dumb, which is funny, because did you read it or did you not read it? The meme says you didn't read it, but anyways, so what I'm saying is you shouldn't be content with them not adding a receiver. You should be patient, because this is the month of March. They don't play football till September. The draft is a month away. There are plenty of trades to be made. Like, these things take time, and the Titans are addressing position. Like, they've not been sitting on their hands this entire offseason. They've been making moves. They've mostly solidified the defense. They've been adding on the offensive line. They've not really touched the skill position players. Now, what does that tell us? Maybe that tells us they think, because the market in free agency of skill position guys is really depleted, really old, or really flawed, maybe they're interested in trading, or maybe they're interested in drafting guys. That's what that could be telling you. I think a more reasonable assumption, if you were to say, okay, they're not picking up skill position players in free agency, Does that mean A, they don't think they need new skill position players, which is obviously untrue, or B, we're going to get some, just not right, not free agency. We're going to look into the trade market, look at the draft. That's the reasonable take here. And if that's proven untrue, and this was what I said in the tweet, if you get to August and the Titans are still rolling with the group that they have, then yeah, pound the alarm, set the place on fire, throw your hands up in the air and get upset. That's reasonable. That would, I mean, it's not, I take that back. It's not reasonable. This team's foundational aspects on the offensive line and on the defense, at least for this upcoming year, that's what's more important, at least to me, than the skill position players, for them to have to establish a floor. So if they were to not address one of the positions, like if you were to tell me, okay, the Titans this offseason can address the offensive line or the wide receiver room, without a doubt, I'm saying, okay, leave the wide receivers as is. It's really, really not good. It's one of the worst rooms in the league. But you've got to have a better offensive line. Like, there are priorities here. And in football, you just can never underestimate the value of the trenches. You really do win and lose in the trenches. And any Titans fan that claims that the offensive line isn't priority numero uno with a bullet in this offseason clearly has not been watching the Titans the last 2 years, when largely they've been derailed by horrific offensive line play and losing in the trenches along with triage and injuries and the such. So I think basic reason tells us the Titans intend on improving their wide receiver room before they play football again. Use your logic skills, people. Does their decision to stay away from the free agent market mean they don't intend on improving? No, it does not. So just be patient and infer, use your brain. They clearly think alternative avenues of adding talent are a higher value proposition for this roster. It's really that simple. And so for some folks, I think they maybe just be, you know, misunderstanding the way that the offseason works kind of in stages and how there are different ways to add to a roster than just free agency. I get it, right? You're a casual fan, or maybe you're a diehard fan, and even you can't resist looking around and you see other teams add in free agency and they get to win March, they get to win May, they get to win April, and they win the offseason. JT, how often does the team that wins the offseason look awesome in the regular season?
Not a lot. I mean, even back in the combine, Mike Vrabel said to our faces, hey, look at Kansas City. They were not a team that came out of the offseason huge winners, and look what happened. Like, it's few and far between.
When as people who are many Titans fans who listen to this show, they're familiar with the AFC South. How many times have the Jaguars or the Texans or the Colts won the offseason, or at least won the offseason for the AFC South? It's almost every year up until just, I mean, the Jaguars won the offseason like three consecutive years before they got good. So it is very easy to get lost in the hype of the moment. I get it. It's March. We're really far away relatively from actual football. It's easy to want to win now, but winning now rarely means winning then. And there are ways to win now via trade and via the draft that don't require you to go out and settle for what there is in free agency. Because the last thing I'll say for this, JT, is it's been very amusing to me this whole offseason, as I imagine it has been for you, seeing a lot of Titans fans online simultaneously say, man, this wide receiver free agent market stinks. These guys suck. I mean, this is brutal. This is slim pickings out here. And then on the other side of their mouth, they're saying, why aren't the Titans signing these free agents? Why would you want them to sign those free agents? I don't get it. So let's pump the brakes. Let's wait and judge things with finality in August. And that's it for the warm-up today. All right, we've got a handful of other topics to get into. JT, how about you lead us into those?
Rand Carthen has had a couple of opportunities to speak with some Titans media this week at the NFL owners meetings. And in a couple of those okay.
That was so good. Just repeat that and then get to that part.
Yeah. Rand Carthen has had a couple opportunities to talk with the Titans media this week so far at the NFL owners meetings. A couple of thoughts to run down here. First, let's talk about what he had to say about Andre Dillard, and furthermore, a couple of the other guys that the Titans have signed this offseason. I believe it was Jim Wyatt who asked him what they saw in Andre Dillard bring him on to this team, and this was his response.
Andre is, I guess for lack of a better way to put it, is untapped potential. This was a guy, a former first-round pick, really athletic, and he just continues to get better. He just needed an opportunity. And I think the overall arching view of the guys that we all brought in, every guy has starter-level ability. They just haven't had the opportunity to be a full-time starter. If you kind of think about it, it's kind of how Vrabe's career, you know, started. You know, he was a third-round pick in Pittsburgh, never started in Pittsburgh. Then I got his opportunity in New England, and obviously the rest is the rest and how he became, you know, the great player that he became. And so each of these guys have log starts here and there, but they've never been full-time starters in their guys.
Definitely a prove-it moment for a bunch of these guys here. Rand's ideals are, hey, we see some starter potential in all these guys who just haven't got their chance. Your thought on his comment there, Easton?
He's basically summing up what we've been surmising as the theme for him in free agency. Like we mentioned a moment ago, shopping in the bargain bin, finding guys who you think have starting high-end, untapped potential. I think it's a great way of putting it, the way that he put it. And giving them a kind of a tweener contract, not quite a backup, a little bit richer than that, but not quite, you know, Andre Dillard's not making great left tackle money if he ends up being the Titans left tackle for the foreseeable future. $10 million a year is a really nice number for the Titans, especially as the cap continues to increase each and every year. So yeah, not a whole lot of thoughts there other than I think Carthen's vision for the way that he wants to build up this team in his first year as GM for the Titans is pretty similar to what we were educated guessing as we saw his moves come in. And I think that kind of shopping can be done pretty well throughout the free agent market. I mean, the mad dash for free agency, people consider free agent season to be here at the very beginning of March, right? When the new league year begins and teams first have that opportunity to add new players. Well, if you're not looking for the top end guys, they tend to kind of stick and sit there and be available for a little bit through March, through April, some even after the draft. So it wouldn't shock me at all if that's the way that he's going about it. We see the Titans continue to add these kind of guys, maybe not as much. I feel like the guys they've added so far are 75% leaning towards starter or rotational player, 25% backup role player situation. You may see some more 50-50 guys or some more backups more than starters, but I think you'll continue to see some really nice intentional bargain adds. You may even see some bargain trades. And I think that's the way that he's going to go about it. So ultimately, with the amount of work this team needs this offseason and the way that Rand Carthen is approaching it, it wouldn't shock me at all if he continues to not drag out the offseason for the Titans, but kind of extend the news segment of this team's roster building longer than you're used to.
Well, he also was asked about how he feels the offensive line kind of core group is constructed right now, in which he said, I've been in it for 15 years, and no matter who we felt our starters were at some point during camp, you're like, damn, we need another tackle. So it sounds like Rand Carthen is a guy who would like to add one or two more tackles before they get to that preseason.
Absolutely. And I think that was in response to either him talking about Andre Dillard or the 11th pick, or maybe both. Obviously, the Titans are a contender for one of those top tackles at the top of the draft. We don't know whether or not that's what they'll do. That's one of the two, maybe three positions that they're primarily looking at up there at 11. So it wouldn't shock me at all if they add one via the draft at the top of the draft. I'd be floored if they don't add some linemen in the draft, period. I expect them to come out of the draft with at least one, if not two or three lineman options, as this offensive line needs to be young and kind of start from scratch. And there's a lot of really nice depth, I think, in this draft at both the tackle and guard position. We talked about a number of those guys yesterday. I think that this is a team that needs at least one more bona fide tackle. I know that Vrabel and Carthen continue to harp on, and this isn't an unfair thing for them to be interested in, talking about guys who have versatility, guys that can play more than one position and play violent and physical and are kind of outliers in that way. That's great and good and awesome. And that's a large part of the reason why the San Francisco roster as we continue to compare what ran the former San Francisco 49er front office executive is now doing in Tennessee to what was done at his old employer, we see a team in San Francisco that has a lot of those guys, but they also have the Trent Williams of the world who are bona fide starting left tackles, right? And so the Titans need, I think, at least one more of those guys. Andre Dillard may end up just being your left tackle, but if it was up to me, I would go find a guy that's for sure a left tackle, or at least a left tackle option in a Peter Skoronski, who I think is an outlier to that rule simply because he's the best lineman in the draft. So I think that they'll add at least one, maybe two, and we will see that happen.
Mike Vrabel also talked to Titans media personnel this week at the owners' meetings. And of course, it was the same old, same old. He was asked once again about, is Ryan Tannehill going to be the starter of this Titans team come August and September? And this is what he had to say.
Of course we do. We're in March. We're continuing to build a football team, the best football team we can. And Ryan's healthy. He's getting healthy. I would say that he's putting the work in. It's been good to see him around the building. We always expect that. But to make predictions, I think I've been through this last year. I'm not going to commit to anybody being on roster on September. You know what I mean? I've seen it change too quickly. And of course that, you know, we want Ryan as our quarterback. You know?
And Mike learned his lesson last year right there. If you caught the little bit about, hey, man, not going to commit to anybody being on our roster in September when we're in March. Kind of like you did last year on the Rich Eisen show when he said, as long as I'm the coach of this team, A.J. Brown is going to be a Titan. Well, John Robinson had something else to say about that. And that's why he is now abiding by, let's keep our mouth shut and hope that certain guys are here, but not make any promises like that, which, you know, live and you learn, understandable. As far as what I take away from that clip, it's kind of nothing, JT, don't you agree? I mean, this time of year, when you're asking these executives or these coaches about star players that may or may not be on the team, are they going to be on the roster? Well, what do you expect them to say? They're under contract. They're on the team until they're not, right? Like this is something that you can read into, I think, in the aggregate. And so if you get, you know, like we have this year, I think there's something to be said, and maybe you disagree, something to be said about, okay, well, if they are adamant about almost committing to Tannehill over and over and over and over, in like seven different sound bites over a span of 2 months, that's a pretty good indicator that they're leaning towards keeping Tannehill, right? Like that's the kind of thing you can read into. But in an individual statement, especially questions like this, where Vrabel's fielded different versions of this question for different players 10,000 times at this point this year, as this team looks to go through kind of a transitional period, he's just going to continue to give the same answer. And they're on the team until they're not. I like them. They're fun players. I hope they stay on the team. But if they don't, we will make do. So that's really all there is from me on that clip. Did you take anything away from that?
Nothing else besides just the obvious ways that Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthen are able to come up with new dialogues and new words to describe.
I imagine Ryan Tannehill in the back room on the same in team headquarters, just writing down different ways to get around saying the truth.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And we heard a little bit about another guy who's been in the news recently for the Tennessee Titans, Kevin Byard. Mike Vrabel was asked about Kevin Byard's contract situation and what has kind of gone on from that. And here's what he had to say.
A member of our football team. I've said that his durability and his leadership.
Yeah, we probably start that one over.
Yeah. I don't know why they were working so well earlier.
Come on, buddy, you can do it.
Valuable member of our football team. I've said that. His durability and his leadership. And so we'll see where things go. But as of now, there's nothing to report. Communication has been really good. I try to make a great connection with him as a player and a captain on our team for 5 years. Conversations that happened between Kevin and his agent.
So it sounds like, as of right now, Kevin Byard still on this team, still under contract, and will be playing so for the Titans next season.
Yeah, and this is, you know, in reference to the mixed signals from folks like Adam Schefter and Jared Stillman last week, and then some, I'm throwing pens. If we're going to, can we start a hot read drinking show where just recurring bits, yet, like, I think Easton throwing or dropping a pen is definitely on that bingo card, because I tend to do it once every three episodes or so. Anyways, it is something where, you know, he is pretty firm in it. Well, Vrabel isn't pretty firm, but Carthen was. I don't know if you saw that clip, JT, and we didn't pull that one, but Carthen was asked, I think, by Jim Wyatt of TennesseeTitans.com about Kevin Byard in that situation. And Carthen was essentially saying that they unequivocally were not asked by Kevin Byard or his team for a release, which was the sticking point. I think that was last week. Yeah, last week. And so I think that they're probably a good ways down the road on figuring out the Kevin Byard situation, the contract renegotiation or restructure or whatever it may be. I think that they're probably going to come to a conclusion here sooner than later is kind of the vibe that I've been getting. I think Kevin Byard's going to stay here. They've just got to figure out the money and make it work. You just can't justify having that much money, $19 million dedicated to an aging safety this year. You need some more space. So they'll do that. And Kevin Byard, really, if anything, may end up making a little bit more in terms of cash this year because of that base salary. They're going to find a way for him to get all of that money that he's expecting. So I don't think that that's really going to be an issue for either side to come to a solution on that.
Moving on, another hot commodity from this past weekend was, of course, Rand Carthen and Mike Vrabel being at Kentucky's Pro Day, specifically to see Will Levis.
They're drafting Will Levis, right?
Apparently.
And that's what that means, that they're going to draft Will Levis.
It was very much, it seems like everybody was sounding the alarms and the sky was falling because the Titans are now officially taking Will Levis. However, you had something a little bit different to say and maybe almost going as far as to defend Will Levis this past weekend.
No, I don't want, like, anybody that's paid attention to me throughout this draft season knows I'm not big on Will Levis. He's my quarterback four. I think he's got really nice traits. He's got nice potential. I think of all the quarterbacks in this class, the top quarterbacks in this class, for no one does it matter where they land. Fit doesn't matter for anybody more than it does for Will Levis. I think that that is a really important factor for him, and it's the most underappreciated factor of the draft, of NFL player evaluation, period. Like, where you go matters a ton. And so with him, I think that the biggest question really is his accuracy. We mentioned this yesterday on the show. Is his accuracy a result of his bad footwork, or are they unrelated? That's the question these evaluators have to make. And it's one that is kind of the crux of the argument with Levis. I'll say this though. The hate for him's kind of jumped the shark, hasn't it? I'm trying to wrap my head around. We've been talking about this a little bit off air, JT. I don't understand where people get this. Like, I understand people don't like the prospect. I get it. I understand why they think that he's not worth where he's worth. I would not take him before the end of the first round personally. I think that he's a mid to late first round grade for me, which is a really good quarterback and a potential starter for sure. But I can't help but think people have kind of drank the Kool-Aid a little bit too much on this. A little too far down the rabbit hole on this one, maybe a little bit of a groupthink rabbit hole. It's easy to get carried away, and I think that's where we're at now with Will Levis. There's been a lot on the Titans Twitter of people that are either being melodramatic or are morons. It's one of the two, talking about if Titans will draft Will Levis, I'm done. I'm hanging him up. I'm not a Titans fan any longer. The same dude saying that he's no longer a Titans fan if the Titans draft Will Levis is the same exact dude that said they were getting off of Twitter when Elon bought the company, and the same dude that said they were moving to Canada when ex-politician, you fill in the blank, was elected into office. Like, that is that dude. The dude that just says that, like, tell me more about that wolf, boy. Just keep on crying about the wolf, because I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I think that you're full of it and you're looking for attention. And if you really are serious about that, I would suggest that your hatred for Will Levis is ridiculous and delusional. Maybe you're a giant Tennessee fan, or maybe you just hate the Wildcats. I do think there's some regional SEC bias here. I think if Titans fans weren't so, if the Titans fan volunteer fan Venn diagram didn't overlap so much so that it's almost a circle, we wouldn't have so much vitriol in the common space for Will Levis. Yeah, he's a flawed prospect. Yeah, he's probably not worth a top 10 pick for the Titans. Depends on the team, but for the Titans, he's definitely not worth the 11th overall pick. Certainly not worth trading up for, in my opinion. But he's also a really nice quarterback prospect. And in terms of quarterback prospects, he's one of the rare ones who, if the upside hits, he could be your generational quarterback. He could be a franchise quarterback without a doubt. I mean, if anybody tells you the upside for Will Levis is not a bona fide franchise quarterback, you don't know ball. Now, the odds of him reaching that potential, I think, are lower than the other guys in this draft. And that's why he's my quarterback four. That's why I think that it's fair to be lower on him, as am I. But to be almost so personal, the hatred towards him, I don't understand it. I think that it's jumped the shark. I think it's ridiculous. I think we need to tone it down a little bit and quit making me defend Will Levis. Can we all just sit here in a normal, rational person's space and say, yeah, quarterback four, I think he's a little bit overhyped. Don't love him. Because that's where I'm at. That's where I'd had been at. That's how we had all been up until like 10 seconds ago when the Titan, I guess maybe it's a fear reaction. That's really what it is, JT, as I'm figuring this out live on air. That's what it is. The Titans send person a big boy personnel to Kentucky to watch the pro day. And the Titans are a team that need a quarterback, potentially. In the near future, at the very least, they need a new quarterback, you'd imagine. And so those dots get connected and people get scared because they want the Titans to get, this is really what's funny about it, right? For a franchise that for a couple of years now has been so desperate to replace Ryan Tannehill with a scarecrow, anything living or breathing or even resembling a human being that has arms and can catch a football and throw that football down the field. They sure do hate the idea of getting a prospect that is a consensus first round grade in this draft. And so I think it's a little bit silly.
Well, just to finish the point of how far the hatred has gone, I just had to bring this up because it's the thing this week that's made me laugh the most here. Okay. As you were talking about people crying wolf on Will Levis, someone clearly did not like that you were calling them out and proceeded to quote tweet you with one of my favorite tweets of all time now, in which they wrote, and I believe it was Arabic.
I think it's in Arabic.
And Easton at first did not translate it, but I took the liberties of translating it.
I figured it was just rubbish, just mumbo jumbo.
And it says, one day you will wake up and taste the joys of your life like cobwebs in your mouth. We will seek retribution for your unforgivable crimes, which is quite the response to a Will Levis tweet, but hey, man.
So this is a Wendy's?
Yes, I mean, that's like, the only response to that. No, but the response, to be fair, the response was clearly a joke. It's very funny. So do you have the account in front of you? Can we shout that person out?
I think his name was Noah at Heroes Zier.
Okay, yeah. Great tweet, Noah, assuming that's a joke, because it was a picture. You mentioned the Teletubbies picture.
I believe it is, right? Yeah.
I think it's like a grainy It's some sort of ritual around a car.
There's not a lot of context. Like, I don't know how exactly it.
It's some sort of
demonic
ritual
to Will Levis, but
no,
for some reason,
that's the point. It has nothing to do with
this. This is kind of the response that Will Levis gets from Tennessee Titans fans. Let's move on now to another guy who has another fan base just all up in arms and just kind of almost as miserable as Titans fans seem to be online.
No, completely disagree. This fan base has to be just in, they're in the ringer right now. They're in the washing machine. This is awful for these folks.
We've talked about Lamar Jackson a lot on this show, not a lot of him going as a Titan, but we continue to talk about him in some facet.
And Lamar Jackson, the Titan, is every day that passes, it feels like the percentage points creep up. It's not high, but it keeps getting more and more likely, I feel like. More possible, at least.
Exactly. But Lamar Jackson, today put out on Twitter like a message to his fans, which was literally just like a tweet, and then he replied to the tweet, and like it was like a two. So I don't know if it's exactly a letter to his fans. He was just tweeting at Baltimore Ravens faithful that he did in fact request a trade.
When did he request that trade?
About 2.5 weeks ago. Oh. He just wanted to let people know. So wait, the Ravens.
Did he happen to tweet that?
He did actually.
Right, and as his current head coach took to the podium.
He
in
did.
Arizona.
Right. So weird Lamar Jackson timing. Playing chess, not checkers, it seems.
Hey, big trust. Big trust.
That's all we got to talk about on the news.
Is that it? That's all we have to say.
Yeah, that's all we got.
Let's dive into it a little bit more. So yes, he says he requested a trade, right? Like as you're saying, on March 2nd. Today is March, what is it, 29th?
29th
yep. Today. Not important that he brings that up now. Why would he bring it up now of all times? Maybe it was a total coincidence. I'm not going to attribute malice to Lamar. I don't know. But it's certainly suspect for him to come out publicly like that about something that happened weeks ago. I mean, it lined up literally. I mean, it was literally right when the coaches at the AFC coaches breakfast this morning were having some media availability. And so according to Mike Garofalo, the flock of people around the Ravens table grew exponentially as soon as that tweet hit the internet, and rightfully so. So it is a situation where I don't know. It's a non-news story. I know our buddies over at a football show were talking about that today. Zach Lyons and Braden Gall were breaking down how that was a total non-news story. Check that show out keep listening to this show after you're done with this show. Go and check out the Monday episode from them, and they break it down in more detail. It really doesn't mean a whole lot that he requested a trade 2.5 weeks ago. The Ravens hold the cards. The Ravens are a smart organization. They know that if they were to trade Lamar Jackson on the trade market would be, I'm trying to think, I think he'd probably be the first quarterback at, what is he, 24 years old? He's extremely young. First quarterback at that age who is a bona fide star, former league MVP, to hit free agency, true free agency, if they were to rescind that tag. Now, they're not going to this year. In the future, potentially, he hits true free agency. But if a team were to, you know, he's not in true free agency right now, but if a team were to approach the Ravens like that for a trade, as he's talking about, it's going to demand more than what his non-exclusive franchise tag is set right now, where any team can sign him to a new contract and forfeit two first round picks to the Ravens should the Ravens choose to not pick up that contract for Lamar. And so they've basically set the floor of Lamar's market where it has been this whole time, right? Like before that tweet, to get Lamar, you needed to give up at least two first round picks. After that tweet, you still got to give up at least two first round picks. And if you're going to go straight up trade with the Ravens, you're not going to. It doesn't make any sense. You'd be volunteering more hypothetical money, more assets, more capital, more players, more draft picks, whatever it may be, for Lamar Jackson than if you were to just try to take him off of the non-exclusive franchise tag. So yeah, that's all there is to say about Lamar Jackson. Are we done with the Titans segment of our news today? Moving on to the Sum It Up.
Yeah, let's move on to Sum It Up.
All right. So we're moving on to our last segment. Me throwing pens again. We're moving on to our last segment of the day, Sum It Up, in which during the off-season period that we're in, it's really not, I don't know, we'll stop doing this, I guess, when there's not any more player movement to talk about, but I enjoy doing it. It's a good way for us to kind of recap what's gone on around the league. So as free agency continues to roll on down the hill, we get some trades come in, we get some signings come in. The business of the NFL is working hard right now. And there's some non-Titans moves that we want to address on the show. However, we don't have infinity time, and this is not SportsCenter. So we know you're not sticking around forever. We're going to sum it up. I'm going to sum up each of these moves in as few words as I possibly can. And that way we can get to all of them. So JT, if you would not mind, let's talk about this first move.
Yeah, so the first one, which I considered kind of a surprise here, Bobby Wagner is headed back to Seattle on a one-year deal worth $7 million. Sum up this reuniting of Bobby Wagner to the Seattle Seahawks.
I mean, it's home sweet home. I don't know how else to describe it. Bobby Wagner left after wanting a significant contract with the Seahawks last season, went to the Rams, tackled a guy that ran onto the field and showed that he still got it. He's still that dog. And in seriousness, had a very, very good season with the Rams, was one of the only bright spots in that entire team this year. And so the Seahawks, I have Ravens stuck in my head now, the Seahawks ended up giving him a pretty nice one-year deal to just come on back. Sounds like they're both very happy, so good for them. Bobby Wagner back to Seattle, home sweet home.
DJ Chark signed a one-year deal with the Carolina Panthers worth $5 million. Personally, I thought it was a little bit low for his services last year. Yeah. Kind of had an impressive year, even though he was not the wide receiver one on that Lions team. He did average about 16 to 17 yards per catch. Sum up this deal for the Carolina Panthers.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's going to get that yards per catch up because he's such a vertical threat. To sum up DJ Chark to the Panthers, it's wide receiver recession continues apace. I mean, this market is so dead. We continue to talk about it. You have to change your mindset on this because a lot of people are reacting, I think reasonably so, to these wide receiver 1 year, 2 year deals for $5-6 million or less and saying, why aren't the Titans going and making these moves? Why aren't anybody in the NFL besides the team that signed them making these moves? You got to understand the deal that these players end up getting is the best option almost always. Sometimes players take deals for less money to be in a certain place or stay with their team or whatever, but usually these deals represent the very top of that player's market. It's the best any team was willing to offer them. So if the best any team is willing to offer DJ Chark is 1 year, $5 million, well then the NFL seems to be in pretty good concert on the idea that, hey, this wide receiver market is not worth sniffing at. The trade market and the draft are where we're focused, and that's where the Titans remain focused as well. This is one where if the Titans had made this deal, I think you'd have been happy with it. But because they didn't, it doesn't. I'm underwhelmed either way. I'm just whelmed. So DJ Chark, to sum him up, is another representation of how this wide receiver recession is continuing apace.
Finally, before we wrap up today's episode, John Lynch at the owners meeting was asked who is the front runner in that QB room of Brock Purdy, Trey Lance, and Sam Darnold to be the week one starter. John Lynch said that Purdy is currently the leader in the clubhouse, assuming his injured elbow is fully healed. Easton, sum up this oddly surprising comment from John Lynch.
Well, to sum it up, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, I've been talking about this since the Niners were making their run in the playoffs with Brock Purdy before he got hurt in the NFC Championship game. And it's one of those things where I just refuse to believe that they gave up the amount of capital that they did to move up to get Trey Lance at number three, I think, overall in the draft 2 years ago. And they've barely gotten to see what they have in him on the field. And they're just going to throw him to the crowd. They're just going to give up, right? Like, I'm not saying that they're going to force him into the quarterback one role. I'm not saying that. And both of these guys, Purdy and Lance, have injuries that they're dealing with that are threatening to, at the very least, go all the way up until the season and keep them out of some activities and maybe even hinder their ability to play until a couple of weeks into the year. I just think it's one of those things, like we were talking about with Vrabel and with Carthen, where you're going to get the cookie cutter, milquetoast, vanilla answers at the owners' meetings. You're going to get the answers you expect to hear. Brock Purdy was the last starting quarterback for this team. Both of the viable starters, and Sam Darnold, dark horse. I think Sam Darnold being week one starter, it's not likely, but it's firmly on the table. These two guys that people are assuming are the two guys, if they're healthy, will be competing for that quarterback one role. He's just going to say the guy who's leader in the clubhouse is the guy who last had the job, right? Like, it's Purdy until it's not, the same way that it's Tannehill until it's not. So I believe it when I see it. The magic of Kyle Shanahan's ability on offense to make a mozzarella cheese stick look like a star Hall of Fame quarterback is profound, and you cannot overstate how good that offense is at making the machine work no matter who is at the controls. So perhaps Brock Purdy is that guy, and maybe Shanahan is able to wizard his way into an old school offense that allows for a relatively immobile pocket passer who is really raw. Or maybe Brock Purdy makes a big jump from year one to year two. But based on what we saw from Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, really impressive for his draft stock coming out. I'm not saying he can't be a quarterback in the NFL, but based on his rookie year performance, while it was impressive, I think if you know ball, you saw through the smoke and mirrors, and you saw the amount of capital they put into Trey Lance a couple of years ago, and they've not quite gotten an answer on him yet. I just don't think they're going to give up on him. I think it's going to be a battle of A, who's healthy, and assuming people are healthy, B, who's the better quarterback in camp, and whoever is the better quarterback, if they're able to compete in camp, will be the starter. I don't think we're getting the answer to that in March. All right. Is that it for today?
That is it for today.
All right. That is it for today. Enjoy everybody being here with us. Appreciate everyone being here with us. A couple of things. Got to mention the Pitchman Fund to get to New York in the description down below. Met our contractual obligation of saying that twice, but really we do. We are excited for these guys. They deserve it. And they are very poor college kids trying to fulfill a dream that is 2 years old now. So please throw a couple of shekels their way and make their day. We would appreciate you doing that. Again, the link for that GoFundMe is in the description below. You can read more about Pitchman and what they're about, what their journey has been like. Make sure to check out yesterday's episode if you haven't already. Easton Freeze's Mock Draft 1.0 was a ton of fun recording that episode and writing that article, which is now out and available for everybody for free publicly on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. So if you want to read it, go check it out on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. You can read my in-depth breakdown. We didn't talk about everything I wrote in that article in the podcast, and I didn't write everything that we talked about in the podcast. So you really, if you want the comprehensive experience, JT, you got to do both. You got to do both, and you'll be better for it. I promise. If you hate it, let me know. I want to hear it, man. Let me know your opinions. Love it, hate it, think it's boring, think it's dumb, think it's flawed. Let us know. Interact with us on social media and all that good stuff. Make sure you're subscribed to the show. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. And with that, I'm your host, Easton Freeze. We'll be back first thing Friday morning. Throw up a little, if you're a prayer kind of person, throw up a little extra prayer that I'm back in my home studio. I'm tired of being here and doing it here. I'd much rather be at home where I'm comfy and have my whole setup. But it won't be the end of the world if we're still here Friday. Hopefully everything back to normal. We will be in your inbox waiting for you first thing Friday morning. Until then, I'm your host, Easton Freeze. For producer JT, this has been the Hot Read Podcast. We'll talk to you on Friday.